You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds. Chat with Traders is sponsored by Trade the Pool. Are concerns about limited buying power, insufficient capital, or fear of losing your own money preventing you from advancing your trading capabilities? Trade the Pool is an online stock trading prop firm that offers funding for stock traders. Demonstrate your skills, trade their capital, and keep your profits. You can engage in intraday trading and now swing trading on Trade the Pool with any U.S. stock or ETF. The procedure is straightforward. Pay an evaluation fee, successfully complete the evaluation, and get funded. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Markets, speculation, and risk. This is the Chat with Traders podcast, hosted by Aaron Fifield.
Welcome to Chat with Traders, episode 227. This time, we are deviating a little bit from the regular format, as I'd like to start doing some occasional trade recap episodes. So just as it sounds, the idea here being that I bring on a guest purely to step through the ins and outs of how they executed one specific trade, from forming a trade idea, initiating a position, managing it, and then finally getting out the other end. And the first to do it is Chase Galbraith. He is an Australian equities trader who's most active in small caps. The trade in focus today took place between September and November 2021 in mineral exploration company Kingrose Mining. The ASX ticker or symbol is KRM. So I would categorize this particular trade as a swing trade, largely driven by fundamentals, but it also incorporates tape reading and price action around execution too. Now, a couple things that you should know. KRM is a sub 10 cent stock. So what that means, on the Australian market, sub 10 cent stocks trade in tenths of a cent. So for example, when you hear us referencing the price as 4.5, etc., this is 4.5 cents, not $4.50. And if you go to the show notes at chatwithtraders.com/227, you'll see a price chart with an overlay of Chase's executions and running P&L, etc. So it might be helpful to pull this up and have it in front of you while you're listening. Finally, please remember that none of this is financial advice. As I always say, you are entirely responsible for your own trading decisions. All right, hope you enjoy this one. Here is Chase Galbraith. How did this stock get your attention? How did it appear on your radar?
I'd been watching the stock for a while. I traded it years ago when it was like predominantly a gold stock. It was producing mine in Indonesia. And then earlier this year, they refreshed the board and the management team, and they appointed a guy by the name of Fabian Baker, who he sold Tethian Resources, which was listed on the TSX. He sold that company to Adriatic, which is one company that I follow on the Australian Stock Exchange. So I'd followed pretty much Fabian across from Tethian and then into Kingrose when he was appointed as managing director. So I was kind of watching it and seeing what his role would be there if they were to continue with the Weilingo mine, or they were going to look to go to an explorer route and maybe acquire different assets, because he's got a lot of experience in in Europe. So I was just keeping an eye on, I think that was about in February of 2021. So he was appointed in Feb, and then there was probably about 6 months of, I'm guessing, some due diligence on projects in that period of time. And then they looked like they were getting more serious towards that August, September period. They'd rebranded the company, or their, you know, all their marketing information, and they'd put out a new presentation, I think, in September. So that's when it got brought back into my attention. A couple of really intelligent dudes on Twitter that I follow that they were also following and kind of suggested to me that it was definitely worth keeping an eye on. So I was just at that time, I was just watching into that August period.
Okay, so it was a company that you had sort of, you were fairly familiar with its history.
Yeah, familiar with the asset that they were previously working on, which was they'd kind of gone for, they were, the mine itself was on care and maintenance, so it wasn't producing any cash flow or anything. They were trying to infer some more resources. They were doing some active drilling. They were trying to find some the resource that they were mining at the time had some water ingress, and they closed down the mine and then went out inside and tried to drill a few more targets to find more resources outside of that area. So it was kind of in a bit of no man's land whilst they found new resources and they kind of chose a new direction. So I wasn't trading it, or I didn't have a position in it during that time. But when they looked to go down a different route of mergers and acquisitions, or just, yeah, that's when I started becoming more interested in the story again.
Okay. So is this something that you do quite often, or is sort of a big part of how you trade, is understanding the fundamentals, you know, some of the management, the projects that are behind a company?
Yeah, I think because I'm not a purely a technical trader, I feel as if I need to have like a decent understanding of the fundamentals before I can develop like enough conviction and idea to go and put full size on the trade. I feel like I have to understand at least like the basic fundamentals, the direction on like if it's going to be like the gold sector at the moment, for instance, doesn't really excite the market. So I don't want to be stuck in a company that's going down that kind of route. When they revise their direction and they started looking down that battery minerals path, I guess that was the kind of the blinker to start looking more deeply at what their new direction is, because like they could have gone on and spent their $30 million of cash on drilling the gold resource, but it wouldn't have attracted the same kind of attention in the market that going down that whole battery minerals route that seems to attract, you know, those blue sky valuations that you're seeing at the moment.
Sometimes we see, especially in these smaller cap stocks, is they will almost pivot, or they'll announce that they're moving into sort of the flavor of the month or the sector that's hot at the moment. Was there anything about this which gave you the confidence that this was a real change?
Yeah,
it was just trying to build some hype in the stock?
Yeah, I guess the difference between that and a typical micro cap is that KRM had a large cash balance. They had $30 million of cash sitting on their balance sheet. So they had plenty of opportunity to find a decent asset, and they hadn't raised capital in, I think it was about 5 years. So they had plenty of opportunity to buy a decent asset that had, you know, tier one potential. It wasn't going to be just going through a bunch of the assets that they have and trying to find the, you know, flavor of the day kind of thing.
Okay. So speak to me about when you initiated a position. Like how did you time your entry?
I initiated my first entry and I actually ended up cutting that, which was at 4.8, I believe. That was in August. I was trying to buy a position, but it was just so much. It was still so heavy through that first dip, so I couldn't actually hold that position. I ended up cutting it. I first started looking for an entry when, so it was 11th of August. So it got down into that like 4.5 to 5 range, and it was consolidating through there. And that was kind of like at that 5 resistance was kind of a long term. Like the index, it's been kind of ranging in that for about 4 years. So I was trying to find a position that was below that 6 like res, and I thought that for that 5 range was going to be a decent entry, but it got really heavy into that lower 4 area. So I ended up cutting the initial trade, and I ended up re buying when it reclaimed that 4.5. So that was my initial entry, and then started adding through that 4.5 to 5 range. That's where I got about half my position. And then, so then built through that 5 range. So I think I accumulated about 80% of the position from 4.5 to 5.2.
Okay. So what was it about that price or that range of prices that you liked? Like, what was it about the timing of this trade?
So the cash balance, so it was backed at 4.2 cents just on their cash balance. So if I'd allowed myself 15 to 20% from that initial cash balance to, and that was sort of the, I guess that was from my stop loss. I was looking to stop out in that 4.2 to 3.9 range if it came down to that. So I guess I didn't want to give, I didn't want to buy it up too far in case they, this asset was not acquired in a reasonable timeline and people just got sick of the story. So I wanted to make sure that there was a level to work off that would allow us me to hold out and people could see value in it without having to acquire another asset. So I felt like that range was reasonably priced for the risk reward that if they were to acquire the asset within, because they announced that they wanted to acquire the asset by end of year. So I think that left me about a 3-month period before that there was an expected acquisition.
At the start of your comment there, you said something about 4.2. I don't remember the exact words you used.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, right. So 4.2 was the cash backing of the stock. So I figured if I'd bought, I was looking to buy about 4 million units in that range, that if there was slippage through that area that I was hoping to get out, but by 4.2 to 3.9 in that range.
Okay, so what's a cash backing at 4.2? Like, what are you referring to there, and how do you work that out?
So the cash on the balance sheet, I believe, was about 30.5 million. So the market cap at 4.2 cents was about 30 million. So okay. It was pretty much being valued at zero enterprise value at that 4.2 cent level.
Understood. Okay.
Yeah.
So as you were buying it through this range, can you just go into some detail about how you were buying it?
Yeah, sure. So at the time, there was a couple of levels that had like iceberg sellers on there. I guess when like a stock like this, it really hasn't, it's been ranging in a base for a long time, and it doesn't appear to be doing anything that it hasn't been doing the last couple of years. It's kind of like a stagnant stock. People, I guess, are looking for any liquidity to sell out on. So there was a lot of like hidden orders on, you know, iceberg orders that were allowing for me to actually find a fair bit of liquidity in that range. So I wasn't sitting on the bid as much. I was more so taking liquidity through that range. So whenever liquidity was popping up, I was taking it.
Okay. And you were just adding bits each day for what, a week or so there?
Yeah, probably about a week in that range before. It started just, you could just feel in the tape that it started to lose the sellers. They were becoming exhausted, and it was getting harder and harder to accumulate in that range without pushing it higher.
Okay. And you may have already covered this, but was there any fresh news while the stock was trading around this level?
Yeah. So there was a presentation that it was put out. I believe that was... it was in September, so I'm just looking at the announcements now. So it was 30th of September, they released an announcement, and that pushed it up about 5%. And in that announcement, they had pretty well stated that they were looking for a PGE, nickel copper asset. So they're not exactly like a common type of deposit. So it sounded like they'd actually found an asset, and they were doing the due diligence on it. So it sounded like it was pretty close. And they'd also announced that they wanted to complete the acquisition by end of year. So they'd only really allowed themselves 3 months to complete the acquisition. I think that it also solidified that their new direction was to go down the exploration route rather than stick with the way lingo and find hopefully to find new resources there. So I think it was a pretty clear change of direction in that presentation that would have, to anyone who would have read it, would have seen that was their new direction that they're going to take.
And I think you said you got about 4 million units between, was it 4.5 and 5.2-ish?
Yeah, around about that, yeah.
Yeah, roughly speaking. Why 4 million units? Can you talk to me about how you determined your position size?
Yep, sure. So the 4 million units, I was pretty much just all based on what liquidity was in the book that I could sell, that I could hit out on. So say, for instance, that whatever reason the market was tanking, I was relying on that book that I'd be able to have liquidity to at least reduce my losses and get out with a reasonable loss, not something too drastic. So I was pretty much just, it was all liquidity based at that stage, just making sure that I didn't get overextended in the trade and that I would end up tanking it. I guess with these small caps, you really have to be cautious of liquidity because it can, on a bad night in the States, for instance, you can look in the books, there's nothing to rest on. So I'm just trying to, you're obviously going to have to take on risk by taking on that kind of position, but still just to make sure that there's enough liquidity in the book that if you want to hit out of that trade, that there is something to rest on. It's not guaranteed, but that's kind of my positioning was based upon that.
This might be a little bit hard to answer because obviously this was a few months ago now, but when you talk about there was liquidity in the book for you to fall back on, you still had 4 million units. I'm kind of familiar with this stock and I know that there's not just, 4 million units on the bid most of the time. A pretty thin stock. During that time, most days it wouldn't do half a form. It would do a million units.
Yeah. It was very,
you're pretty substantial size given the liquidity, I think.
Yeah.
Like, where was this liquidity that you're talking about? Are you talking like as liquidity as a whole from say, 4.5 down to 4 or?
Yeah. So I guess that would be allowing for whatever the book, not that saying that the sale orders in the book would stay there if there was any downwards momentum in the stock. But I guess if you got to base your position size on your conviction at first, the liquidity in the book, and then, the risk versus reward, like if I'm going to have that bigger size, well, what's the potential upside? What's the potential downside? I figured that the risk through this level was worth taking on. Down 4.2 is cash backing. So if I was to have that slippage down through to say 4, that the loss may be, I think I allowed for about $20,000 loss through to the bottom end of that range. So I guess, that would have been, if it had slipped through to that 3.94 range, we were talking like close to 52-week lows, if not 52-week lows. So. And I felt like it was just the risk versus reward was there to add size through that range.
And in putting on this trade, you just mentioned their potential upside. Like, did you have, a price or an area in mind for where you might begin to, or were you anticipated that the stock could reasonably get to?
Yeah, I guess I did have an expectation that it, on a decent acquisition, that we could expect in that $20 to $30 million EV range, which would have at 4 cents, we're talking at a $30 to $40 million valuation, that 8 to 9 cents range. So I was allowing for that, but it actually most of the gains were had pre-acquisition. So it's one of those tricky ones where you're not expecting the stock to gain prior to the acquisition, but when it does, you're not quite sure if people have also cued onto the fact that this acquisition is likely and they're going to sell the news. So it's one of those. I actually ended up selling probably about half the position pre-acquisition because it had run about 80% prior to them announcing the actual deal.
Just before we get to that, just a step back. When you were putting on this position, you said there were quite a few iceberg sellers, so reload sellers.
Yeah.
You'd lift an offer, it would reload. Did that ever concern you? Like that there was someone who obviously had quite a lot to sell, they weren't showing their full hand. Yeah, was that a concern at all?
Most of those iceberg sellers were about 4.8 to 4.9. So at that range, the stock's valuation is in that 5 to 10 million range. The research reward, I happily take that in that range, knowing that the caliber of the management team. I guess, it's all like people are going to find when there's no liquidity in a stock for so long, you're going to have a lot of stale holders that are going to take any liquidity they can to get out of the stock. If they are holding, 10 to 15 million unit position and there's liquidity and they've been looking to get out, and they've been in the stock for, you know, I think the 6 months prior, the liquidity was terrible. So there's always going to be those stale holders looking to get out. If they know more than you do, it's, you know, I guess that's a risk you take. But yeah, I guess it didn't concern me too much based upon the valuation. If I'd seen that at a higher valuations, I would be more concerned. But knowing where it was and the risk off was, you know, quite low. So I was happy to take the liquidity there.
You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. They started at the beginning, reimagining the bond screener with an intuitive design that helps you zero in on the exact kinds of bonds you're looking for. Then they made it easier to evaluate each investment opportunity with better data in the places you need it most. Finally, they made investing in bonds as straightforward as stocks or any other asset. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds.
Are you a developing or seasoned day trader who trades the U.S. markets? Is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level is having enough capital to trade? Trade the Pool is a unique online stock trading prop firm that funds stock traders worldwide. Not having to risk your own capital can help you focus on other things like making better decisions on your trades. There's no PDT rules to worry about. You got more than 12,000 stocks and ETFs to trade, long or short, and professional tools at your side. How you get funded is you show them your skills through a straightforward evaluation process. Once you pass the evaluation, you get funded and trade with their pool of money and split the profits. Don't let the lack of buying power, capital, or fear of losing your own money prevent you from taking your trading to the next level. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Can you speak about how you managed the trade? So once it actually did start to move in your favor, I'm pretty sure you added to the position at some point.
Yeah, I added through that 5.5 range. That was like there was a small little range there that ranged within. I think it was about a week and a half, and I was adding a top end of that range. But usually, the way I manage position is I'm never really looking for like a multi-bagger potential. I'd much prefer to like get size in a base or in a range, and then pretty much unwind my position into the breakout or the trend. So I'm not someone who's trying to look for, you know, like three or four bags. So I pretty much started reducing my position from that 6 to 7 range once it had taken out that resistance. So I wasn't adding above 6.
Okay. And did you ever cut any of the position into weakness, if you will? Like you started to reduce your position because you felt as though the trade may not be working?
Yeah, there was the time when I cut my trade was actually the day of the acquisition. It felt as if that like everyone had bought in for the acquisition, and it was like a bit of a sell of the news event. And I guess the market probably hadn't had time to actually evaluate the acquisition itself, and people were looking for, because you've got those technical traders that are playing the break, and then you've also got people that are buying for the acquisition. Then if it doesn't, you know, gap up and run, they're likely going to sell. So I actually sold half my position on that acquisition date just because the book felt really heavy. And I think it actually it matched actually in the red on the acquisition. So I sold some position there and reduced that position pretty significantly through that during the day, just because the book felt it really did feel heavy on that day, despite it being actually a pretty decent acquisition.
What date was the acquisition?
It was the 10th of November. And you'll see what I'm talking about. The range is 6.3 to 8.4. So it had like a huge ranging day. I guess there was a lot of, you know, different traders and investors. And yeah, it was quite hard to gauge. The tape was very whippy, and it was really hard to I guess it was just tricky to know how to manage the position, and if it was going to be a sell the news event, and then over the next few days, it will return back into that 6 to 5 range. So I guess that it's probably not one of my best part of my trading is trying to sell. He's trying to work out how to sell those exponential moves and how to manage those kind of positions in those very whippy ranges.
Okay. And did you sell the lot that day?
I sold the lot. I believe I sold the majority of the position. I kept a small amount just to have like a small like core position, see how it performed the next few days, just to make sure that I wasn't missing out on that if it did go on to, you know, see bigger gains the next few days, that I wasn't missing out on the trade completely. But I did reduce majority of my position on that day.
Okay. So you were selling into the news.
Yeah.
Big liquidity event.
Yeah, exactly. And when you, like, in the days leading up, there really wasn't all that much. I think on average, we're doing about 2 to 3 million units a day. So there wasn't really all that much liquidity if you were to sell a bigger position. And I think that the position topped out at about 7 million units. So I did have a fair bit of size on. And I guess you have to take those events as an opportunity to reduce size, because there may not be liquidity big enough to get out on days ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so you kept a little bit on post that day.
Yeah.
When did you sell the last of it?
I actually sold the position and then bought back in when it started like reducing it, like the range was getting smaller day to day, and the volume was dropping off. And I thought there may be an opportunity for a second trade in there. So I bought back on. So I'm just running through my execution. I bought back on, it was about the 22nd and 23rd, and it started finding that 7 cent base and looking like that it was, it had consolidated enough, and a lot of the hot money had came out of it. So I started buying back. It wasn't as big a position. I think I topped out at about 2 million units through that range.
And then you sold that into, I presume, that spike into 9?
Yeah, then I sold. I actually missed out on that blow-off day. So I actually sold on the 25th and missed the blow-off day the next day, which I think on the 20th. So on the 25th, it topped out at 9.1, and then the following day it went to 9.5. But yeah, I sold in that 8.5 to 8.7 range on the 25th of November.
Yeah, nice one. Okay. So the timeline of this trade, or as you just described, there was kind of two trades there, but one main one. So you started buying in through September. You sold all of it by kind of mid-November-ish. So what's the timeline there? Like sort of 2 months hold time?
Yeah, roughly speaking, yeah. So I think the initial position was initiated in late September, and then closed it out by pretty much late November. So just about 2 months, yeah.
Now, just looking back on this, what were some of the things that you were pleased that you did, you know, things you felt you got right? And was there anything which you feel like you would like to improve on?
Yeah, sure. In terms of doing something right, I guess it's going hard in those A-plus setups. I find that, like, I probably only get, you know, one or two of these kind of opportunities each year where you find those stocks that meet all your criteria in terms of liquidity and opportunity for resource reward, and that suit you, you know, your sector, and you know that's what you define as your own personal A-plus trade. So I guess going hard and getting enough size on to make it significant enough to really count in terms of your P&L. So yeah, I'm happy the way I positioned and sized, and getting to that point where you're uncomfortable, which I think is probably one of those trades that are hard to find, where you have enough confidence to get to that uncomfortable size to really push, you know, your ability in them.
Yeah.
In terms of things I could have done wrong, I pretty much always have an issue trying to sell these blow-off high-ranging tops. I usually miss the blow-off. I always sell in the lead-up and then miss that. Usually, you know, that last, you know, 2 or 3 days in a blow-off move, usually, you know, where you see those 30-50% gains, but the previous 30-50% take, you know, a month. But I'm always all right, like, you know, holding the trend. But when it becomes those exponential moves, I fail to hold long enough to really capitalize on them. So probably holding for a little bit longer and keeping more size so that I could have really made more through that 7 to 9 cents range.
And do you mind sharing how much you made in total P&L on this trade?
Yeah, so it was 160,000, 150,000 of which was the swing, and then it was about 10,000 of just scalping in smaller ranges.
Yeah, that's outstanding, man. Well done.
Thank you, man.
All right, well, let's leave it there. Let's keep it just a shorter episode. I know we could keep going, but if someone wants to find out more about you or follow you on Twitter, would you like to share your handle?
Yeah, no worries. I believe it's just chase.galbraith, chase.galbraith.
Okay.
I think.
Excellent. All right, well, I will pop a link to that in the show notes as per always. Yeah, Chase, appreciate you coming on and sharing this. Thank you, man.
Thanks very much, Andy.
You've reached the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but rest assured, there are more episodes loaded with real market insight and zero hype on the way soon. So to stay updated with each great new release, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review. We'll catch you next time on Chat with Traders.